My name is Kira Gordon. I am the country director for A21 Bulgaria. And before that, I worked in Ukraine for A21 for 2 years and started our office and our operations there. And I've been active in Bulgaria for almost 3 years, and A21 itself has been running for almost 9 years now. Many people don't know this, but they always ask. A21 stands for Abolishing Injustice in the 21st Century, and we follow a holistic approach to what we do in each and every country. We really want to have a flexible and tailored approach based on the 4 Ps, both prevention, prosecution, protection, and partnership.
We're there for the victim. That's why we're all here. That's how it all started. And I'll share a little bit more about our victim assistance a little bit later. We also do trainings on identification. Prosecutions have really become a huge part of what we do. There's the statistic that says less than 1% of traffickers are ever convicted, and we are really passionate about changing that statistic, about creating precedents. And in Bulgaria specifically, the prosecution process is so long that so few judgments are ever done. So we're really determined to stand against that and to help the prosecutions for cases that are not just in our care but are in the care of other organizations. We would offer our legal team and fund those prosecutions in order to see the legal landscape changed. In partnerships, as we've mentioned today, this is just too huge of a problem for any one country or organization to solve alone. We have to work together, and A21 also wants to bolster the government and the police effort in whatever country that we're in. So that's a little bit about our approach, which is probably similar to many of yours here today. As was mentioned, I'm bringing a little bit of a different perspective here today, because I am bringing the perspective of a source country and the reintegration back into a source country as opposed to a destination country. I just wanted to touch on a little bit of the trends that we're seeing, because they're probably reflecting some of the same trends that you're seeing. Many people become victims in many different ways. There's many different recruitment methods. But we are seeing mostly false job opportunity and the lover boy model. As your experience probably also shows, the lover boy model, being recruited through a romantic relationship, usually begun over social media. They meet in some Bulgarian town, have a great weekend, and then go to visit a family member in Germany or Amsterdam or wherever the case may be. Or he has a great job for her where she's going to be able to support her family, and then they travel. And that is probably the majority of our recruitment methods that we're seeing. In Bulgaria, a key factor to remember is, as you're assisting those that you come in contact with, is that the victim is normally in relationship in some way with the recruiter. They usually know, either as a family or a friend or a neighbor, they usually know in some way the person who has recruited them as the first step into exploitation. So that's a key challenge, but a key thing to keep in mind. So yes, just to keep in trends, social media recruitment, we're seeing on the upswing. Bulgaria is very rural and provincial, but they're also very technologically advanced. There's Wi-Fi in even the most provincial town cafes, and smartphones are everywhere, and Instagram and Facebook are on the rise. And so we're really seeing an upswing in social media recruitments. And we're also seeing an interesting trend in having more male victims. We have almost half and half male victims in 2016. And we're also seeing larger victim groups being recruited at the same time. So instead of one individual or two individuals recruited at the same time, we're seeing sort of really large victim groups. Our most recent was a group of 18 Bulgarian men trafficked into the UK for work in a car wash. But what's interesting is that we're thinking that the greater crime that is happening is financial fraud, because they're taken, they're forced to work for a few days at a time or for a couple weeks, but their identification is taken, which with that identification, you can then do a greater crime of financial fraud. You can take out credit, you can take out loans, identity theft, financial theft, and then their documents are given back, but then their lives have already been significantly changed as debts and things are already on their names. But it's a very easy way for traffickers to make a lot of money just by using someone's name. So that was our most interesting recent case that came through. As we're saying, there's some key differences in working in a source country, in a reintegration country, as opposed to a destination country. And there's differences in how you must operate. The difficulty in working in a source country is reintegrating and returning people and assisting them while they are in the exact same set of circumstances from which they became trafficked. The same family members, the same streets, the same schools, the same poverty, the same lack of education. It's all the same. So they've had this horrible experience and they've come home, but they face the exact same things that, contributed to them being a victim in the first place. So many of our cases have been trafficked by family members, neighbors, someone from their village. We've had several cases of even civil marriages to their traffickers, to the people who are exploiting them. In many instances, it's not safe for the individual to go home, but that is still their desire. If when I've gone through something hard, when I'm going through a difficult time, I just want to go home. So I understand that emotion. Often our survivors also have children, and their survivors want to go to their children. They want to be where they are. They want to get back up on their feet. Even though they've been through this trauma, they want to get back up on their feet to be there for their children. And I don't think any mother in the room would not want that. And so that is a huge challenge, is how can we assist them to protect them from becoming a victim again in that, those exact same set of circumstances. So because of that, re-trafficking is always a risk, especially with these complicated relationships, these rural dynamics, the use of social media, as I've already mentioned. In 2016, we had a young woman who was lived near the Turkish border. She met a man on Instagram. They started chatting. They agreed to meet up in a Bulgarian town, as I mentioned, was kind of the method. They agreed to travel to Belgium. They were in love. She ended up being exploited, called our hotline, was actually rescued within a few days. Came back to Bulgaria and again met someone on Facebook this time. So with the help of social media, just to illustrate what a trend and what a tool this is, the same young woman had been trafficked, had been recruited twice via social media within the same 6 weeks. A, because of this tool, this technology, and B, because she was going back to the same set of circumstances. I just wanted to cover just a couple of our main challenges of doing aftercare and integration in Bulgaria. And there's two really significant factors, and the first one is the Roma factor. Typically between 45 to 65% of our cases, not only just A21 cases, but of other organizations working in the country, are Roma victims. Typically Roma individuals have already experienced some sort of exploitation or abuse or trauma even before they were ever trafficked, and trafficking is just the latest thing that's happened to them. They also, because of this, don't always recognize victimization. They don't always self-identify as a victim. As you've probably heard, forced marriages, underage marriages are also very common. And growing up into the family business of prostitution or organized crime, is very normal. So if you've been taught your whole life that this is what your family does and that this is normal and this is how you make money and this is how you support your family, then you wouldn't recognize, self-identify yourself as a victim. So this is one of our really key challenges. Reintegration of Roma, if they want to be returned to their families, again, as I've said, they come back to those same families that exploited them. They come back to the same lack of education. They come back to the same situations of exploitation, a lack of work experience. And if they choose not to go back to their families but to come to Sofia, then they face a huge lack of work skills, education, and then also a severe discrimination. Racial discrimination within the city. So it's incredibly hard to be able to assist them to live independently, to work independently. However, we had one woman who came through our program. She did really, really well, had faced incredible exploitation and abuse even before she was trafficked and then was trafficked. But she came through our program. She was doing amazing. She had really recovered. We were so proud that she got a job in the kitchen of a local restaurant, not two blocks from our office in Sofia. She started working. Things seemed kind of okay at first, and then pretty soon they were exploiting her. She was working more than 12-hour shifts. She was not allowed to have a day off. She was getting paid less money than all of the other workers, and there was very little that we could do other than encourage her to get another job. So even though she had put in all of the work and had really worked with us and gone through our program, just because of the fact that she was Roma and faced that discrimination led her to becoming a sort of victim again. I would say the second major challenge that we face are those returning with severe mental health issues. As many of you here know, usually survivors would choose to stay in the country that they have arrived in, but very few will choose to return home to Bulgaria, but it does happen. But our experience and the experience of other NGOs have noticed that it's sort of the most difficult cases that are choosing to return home to Bulgaria, which makes it very difficult. And for us, it's the Roma and the severely mentally impaired, as I've said. And this is a massive complication, as there are not enough state nor non-state resources sufficient enough to care for these individuals. A21 is not a mental institution, and many other NGOs probably in this room are not mental institutions. And the process for a returning victim to gain a spot in a mental health facility is very long. They must go through a series of procedures called TELC procedures, TELC. They have to be inspected by doctors 1, 2, 3 times by a board of physicians. They have to be classified into their level of handicap or impairments. And then they have to go on a waiting list for a place, even if there is a place that to be had in 6 months, in 9 months, in 12 months. But where is that individual going to stay while they're waiting for this period, waiting for this spot to come up? So because of those two reasons, reintegration of Roma and the mentally impaired are probably the two hardest challenges of doing aftercare in Bulgaria. And as I've kind of already mentioned, many people are not trafficked just once, but trafficked multiple times. Because of the factors that make them at risk and vulnerable don't change. So therefore, support and assistance must be centered around the victim, and this is something that we really stand strong on. In order to break this cycle, everything that we are assigned to do must attempt to intervene in this cycle. Something must give. Something has to break this chain. So we really pursue flexible case management in our aftercare approach in Bulgaria. Every survivor has different needs and thus needs a tailored approach. And we really choose to focus on practical, hands-on assistance in the things that we do. I just want to give you a brief summary of the range of victim services that we can provide. You can definitely pick my brain later about how this looks and what this looks like in the outworking. First, we find that we must be really focused on meeting a victim's physical needs. We find that once back in Bulgaria, in the source country, in the reintegration phase, they don't really care about program or recovery if they cannot feed their children, or they cannot feed themselves, or they cannot put clothes on their back. They don't want to talk to you about sitting in a circle or talking about their healing until they know that they can provide for themselves. Also, their physical, their body needs. They cannot focus on healing if they're extremely physically ill or in pain. So those are immediate needs that we seek to address. So intensive medical help and psychological help are one of our first stops. Secondly, our goal is always working towards independence. We do this through a gradual decline in assistance. We have seen that we're not helping the survivor if we're meeting 100% of their needs 100% of the time until they leave our care. If we do this, then we're just sending them back into these same set of circumstances, unequipped for the same things that they will face. So in a source country, our goal is equipping them to face their environment and circumstances, giving them new tools that will protect them and ensure their independence. So that is our goal. And interestingly enough, last year we actually closed our shelter in transition home after seeing it was not the most helpful way to help in a source country, in a reintegration country. Bulgaria has a massive history of institutionalization, and a closed shelter was an unwanted option when working towards reintegration, working towards independence. We would rather help people to live independently or to live in community and then gradually move them towards independence with gradual decline in assistance. We also find that survivors have possibly already spent extended time in a shelter here in Germany or in Belgium or somewhere else, and it's not needed to come back to Bulgaria and go through another shelter program. So because of that, we now work on what's called a community model, which is building on our external assistance, which with a flexible approach, as I mentioned. We help survivors live independently or in community near to our office. It's close to schools, close to public transport, close to services. So it's made our office more of a hub for them to come by, more of kind of like a day center. They can come and meet with us, receive our services and trainings. And this has really helped us to facilitate helping more people and helping them more efficiently to be independent. If a survivor wants to return to family in rural Bulgaria, in other words, not stay in Sofia, then we help them as an external client and source solutions where they're at for the needs that they have in their lives, communicating with them regularly, staying in contact, facilitating counseling over Skype if necessary, visiting them, even if it means traveling through bouldered roads and visiting with pigs in homes. We go and check on them and visit with them and stay in their lives and make sure that they are connected to services and that we're helping them however we can where they are at. So just go briefly through the list. you have here. We do screening, medical, mental health, education. We actually, in the last 2 years, helped a Roma woman start her education from the first grade. So if you have forgotten your multiplication facts, that's a good way to have them reviewed when walking someone else through them. Legal help, family mediation, as has been mentioned here today, is very important. Job assistance and much more. Another key thing that we do is, in Bulgaria, you cannot receive medical assistance if you have not paid your health insurances. And if you're a victim of trafficking and have been in Europe or in another destination country for a period of time, you have not been in Bulgaria to be paying your health insurances. And until those are paid, you're not allowed to receive medical help. Well, if you're a victim of trafficking and you've come back to Bulgaria, you don't have money to pay your backlog of health insurance taxes, and your body is broken and you're traumatized, but you don't have the resources to pay this backlog, and therefore you cannot get counseling or medical help. So one of the key things that we realized early on that we needed to do was actually pay this backlog of health insurance taxes for our survivors in order to help them get back up on their feet, because they were actually putting themselves at risk of being trafficked again just in order to get the money that they wanted, that they needed to be able to receive medical help in their own country. So it was a very clear first step for us. But what's interesting is that many organizations don't do this, and I'm very proud that we're able to do that. Another thing that I really like doing, and something that we've done quite a lot, is dental restoration. It's a key component of our care. We've done it for both cosmetic and for physical reasons. In one survivor, she was actually in physical pain to eat, but afraid to tell us, and she was refused for several jobs just because of the way her teeth looked. But once we helped her receive new teeth, both top and bottom, full sets, she's a completely different person. She's able to eat, she's active, she has a job, and she actually leads a rural outreach into our Roma community outside of Sofia. So it's amazing what meeting a very physical need, a very sort of everyday need, has just completely transformed this person's life. Another key thing that we do, and has already been very much spoken about here, is the use of social enterprise. Like, we've really very much seen in a source country, it's incredibly hard for the victim to reintegrate that. You need something that's going to make a difference in those circumstances. And for us, that difference has been social enterprise. H21 began a social enterprise with the goal of teaching skills, giving work experience, goal setting, life skills, budgeting. But the salaries earned have really meant bridging the gap for a survivor when they're ready. When they're not ready to be fully independent, but still need a degree of care, we've really seen that it lessens their at-risk factor for being re-trafficked. So for us, social enterprises have come under the name of Liberty. We have both Liberty Cleaning Services and Liberty Clothing. It's a legitimate, fully registered Bulgarian business. It goes up and down, but currently we have 6 people fully employed. And as has already been mentioned, just the team aspect is incredibly important. These individuals are in and out of our offices, in and out of contact with us. They observe our relationships, they become part of our team. And we've just really seen this constant contact, holding them to standards and goals, as well as the additional finances in their pocket, has been the difference that really keeps them safe. In turn, our Liberty employees experience growth in professionalism, responsibility, punctuality, as well as personal value and pride and dignity being restored. And they're truly not the same as when they started with us. Currently our Liberty Clothing makes a couple of items, but our main item is beautiful infinity scarves. They're available online if you're interested. And it's already been discussed here today how a social enterprise can be beneficial for everyone involved, but here's just a bit of the structure. So the social enterprise is owned by A21. Survivors then become legitimate employees of Liberty as a separate entity who produce a product or service that earns a profit. Those profits go back to A21, who then reinvest it back into the care of the survivors, both in terms of salaries and other care. So Liberty has really been a resource, especially for the most difficult cases, the ones who have nowhere to turn to, the ones that have no opportunity or resources, for the Roma who face discrimination and the difficulty in finding decent work in Sofia, especially for survivors with children who cannot work a full-time job, cannot work a shift, have nothing to do, nowhere to put their children. This is something they're able to do in their own home at their own time while they're still caring for children. This has also been something that we've had one of our survivors been able to complete nursing school because she was able to work for Liberty on her own time and then complete her nursing degree. So we're really proud of that. complete that there. I've mentioned the partnership is really important. Here's just a list of key partners that we work with throughout the country. Most of these here have crisis care facilities, so we're really able to work a bit as a platform of referral among them. Partnerships are really key, but I won't go into some of the Bulgaria specifics. We can chat more about that later. Facilitating partnership outside of the country is also a key component of what we do. One of our other key projects is called the SAFE Project. It's an end-to-end repatriation service. It provides flexible and tailored support to victims of trafficking who voluntarily wish to be repatriated. The SAFE service supports victims throughout their journey of returning home from pre-departure to post-arrival and then after. So our aim is to transition the victims from a safe place, from a place of crisis to stabilization and independence. So SAFE, the Project SAFE can repatriate both to an A21 aftercare country or to a third party. So in other words, in countries where A21 does not have victim care services, we will work with a vetted partner networks to place survivor in the best care. So for you, practically, this is a key way that you can engage with A21. This looks like, practically on the ground, your social workers connecting with our social workers, Skyping, talking with the victims, working on document restoration, liaising with police, etc. And then it's funding for travel, meeting them upon arrival, reintegration, accompanying them home if that's what they wish. And as most victims are abroad and not within Bulgaria, as we all know, this has been one of our most valuable projects and a great tool and resource for those agencies abroad, like you who are sitting in this room. And interestingly, in 2016, most of our repatriations came from the UK, which many would not expect. And secondly to that was Germany. Let's see. Another key thing that we do is A21 runs the national resource lines in a few countries, Greece, Bulgaria, and South Africa. And much of our work in Bulgaria is really centered around the platform and the tool of the Bulgarian National Anti-Trafficking Resource Line, which A21 started and operates. Here's just a few features. As you can read, nationwide, it's free to call from both within Bulgaria and the EU. So it's a tool and a resource that you can use. You can call to ask for translation help, for a social worker to speak to a Bulgarian victim that you have in your care. Callers stay anonymous. It's always open, free to call, live translation. And it's also a good way for us to help you refer a victim if you need, and for us to gather data and intelligence for law enforcement and for prosecutions if needed. Just a few things about what we do. Anyone can call. We get a lot of calls about students who are looking for jobs, wanting to ask if a job is legitimate. A lot of family members calling about missing family members abroad, gathering cases. A lot of times it's kind of like being a FBI agent. You have to gather intelligence in order to be able to find a victim who is abroad, and so the hotline is a key tool for that. We can also offer training and assistance through that. Yes, anyone. It's also a good prevention tool if students or anyone just want to call and find out more about trafficking. It's also a good way if you would like to call and request hotline materials, either in your language or in Bulgarian. We have, for those of you who do outreach, we have lipstick stickers that can go discreetly on anything that the women that you're meeting with may work with, or stickers or brochures in Bulgarian and in English that you can give to those who are doing outreach, or to social workers, or to law enforcement that you may have contacts with. Come on. Oops. Can we do the video? And now I just want to show you a quick video that's a testimony of how our hotline works and how it's led to a rescue in this last year.
A21 launched the first Bulgarian national anti-trafficking hotline in the end of 2015. Within a relatively short period of time, we received 400 calls and found ourselves working on more than 20 cases, 10 of which are now international law enforcement investigations. However, this is about the individual, like Elena. She called at noon on a regular workday, scared, alone, concerned for her life. So much so, she was whispering her cry for help.
Много ме беше страх. Мислих, че всеки момент ще ме чуят и ще дойдат.
She said she was in the Netherlands, in a small rural town, but she didn't know the exact address. We knew that finding her was not going to be easy.
Обещаха ми работа там. Когато пристигнахме, ме заключиха, биха ме и започнаха да водят различни мъже.
We needed to identify her exact location. We asked her to look out of the window, but there was nothing but a brick wall.
Казах им, че отивам за цигари. Когато излязох, започнах да се оглеждам за табели.
Elena bravely decided to leave, and now we had to find out exactly where she was. Finally, after some time, we had a street name and a number.
Много ме беше страх. Имах чувството, че ме следят, че всеки момент някой ще ме сграбчи.
With Elena on the phone, we helped navigate her to safety with Google Maps to guide her to the local police station. However, before she arrived, the phone suddenly cut off.
Точно ми обясняваха за полицията и ми падна батерията. Просто тръгнах на където ми бяха казали от линията.
We then liaised with the local police station and luckily Elena had arrived safely.
Бях вече в полицията, когато звъннаха от линията.
A21's local partners in the Netherlands went to the station right away and gave her shelter, while we organized to safely repatriate her back to Bulgaria.
Чак като стигнахме в центъра, се почувствах в безопасност. Вече съм си вкъщи и се моля никога повече да не се случва това. Нито на мен, нито на някой друг.
Sadly, the experience Elena endured is all too common. Our goal is to be able to respond and rescue trafficking victims from anywhere in Europe within 12 hours of their first call. With your help, A21 can continue in this fight. Join us, be part of the mission, get involved.
That was a case that we had this last year that we were really happy about, and we were able to follow it in live as the story told. The young woman in that video, her name is Luiza Grigorova. She's actually a pretty famous Bulgarian actress who has become our hotline advocate. So we're happy to have her. So I just wanted to leave you with the contacts. I have information in the back. And if you have information about the hotline and also resources if you would like some for social workers or to give to those of you that do outreach to give directly to potential victims, we have those available as well. And I will be available at the end to ask any more questions or if you'd like to have any more details about what we do and how we can liaise with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Kyra. We do have questions.
Oh, great.
Stay here. I already know four of them.
Oh, great.
And sure. I have some more.
Do it.
Thank you very much. First of all, you talked very often and showed us we and us. Mm-hmm. How many are you?
In the office.
Yes?
We are about 10 people. Because we have
full-time.
Full-time, because we have the hotline works around the clock. So we have to have night and weekend workers for that as well. Yeah. And then we have night and weekend workers who are available for victim assistance.
And would you say, do you have freelancers, people that you can approach, besides the organizations you showed us in a few slides ago, that you can, we say ehrenamtliche in Germany, volunteers, you can just phone up and say, we need somebody more, could you go somewhere?
Mm-hmm. We do. Bulgaria, it's a little bit more difficult in Bulgaria. The volunteer sort of culture is not as strong there as it is maybe in America or in Western Europe. But we definitely do have volunteers that we call on and are trying to move more and more in that, definitely.
And the six that work for Liberty are on top?
Are on top?
You know, you mentioned about the company you do.
Yeah.
That's not the 10.
No. Okay. Not included in the 10.
There's somebody who asked, how do you manage cultural differences, especially language? That was a question I had myself too.
Okay.
Do all your staff speak Bulgarian, Rom,
yes.
Roma language or dialects? Mm-hmm. And how is it with you?
Right.
You have been in Ukraine before. Do you apply the languages very well?
Yes. Well, all of our staff in Bulgaria is Bulgarian. They're both, and they all speak English. So I am the sole foreigner. I'm the odd man out. I speak Russian from my time in Russia and in Ukraine, which is not Bulgarian. Many people think it's the same thing as Bulgarian. It's not, I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. So I've worked hard to be able to be conversational in Bulgarian, at least. but our staff does, and we have a hotline worker who is can speak the Roma dialect.
And you're not at the hotline then?
I'm not at the hotline, no sir. That would not work well. Although we do have live translation in 170 languages if needed.
Okay. What is your experience with corrupt police or prosecution?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, you know what you're talking about.
Thankfully, we have not had direct problematic experience with corruption. About a year and a half ago, the whole of the Bulgarian police was reorganized as a result of corruption being found in the higher levels of the police.
To the better, do you think?
It is to the better, I believe. Some of them should have been convicted, and unfortunately, most were not. They were just reassigned. Mm-hmm. But to that end, we have not had experience with corruption.
Mm-hmm. One person asks, is it true that prostitution is illegal in Bulgaria?
Yes, that is true. It is not legal.
To my question, mm-hmm. A question comes up, maybe to one or the other too. We are discussing now the famous Swedish model.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a discussion in Bulgaria? What do you think about it to apply it there? Because if it's forbidden, mm-hmm. the penalty, first of all, is on the prostitute again.
Right. Yes, prostitution is illegal in Bulgaria, but it does sort of de facto happen. It's very much accepted. There is a high level of discrimination on the prostitutes, which we don't use that word, but in the terms of society, that's the term that they would use. I'm not an expert on the Swedish model, but I think there's substantial trafficking literature out there that shows that where it exists, the trafficking increases.
Increases.
So no, to answer your question, no, there's not a discussion of that happening in Bulgaria, and I doubt that there would be very soon.
Okay. I'll read the next question. You know, this technical stuff is just amazing. And they all ask in English. Very good.
Great, guys.
I thought I had to translate everything here live, you know, but no. Have you experienced difficulties with placing Romani women or men into new job placements? How do you handle deep-rooted cultural habits, as one can experience?
Right. We definitely have. As I mentioned, we had the case study of a Roma woman being discriminated in a normal secular job. It is very, very difficult, as many of our cases are Roma, trying to teach and model different ways of life, different standards, different understandings is very difficult. And sometimes at the end of the day, you don't win. And sometimes at the end of the day, they do have choice. So it can be a bit of a battle. But you just kind of have to keep trying and just saying the constant encouragement, constant always being there. Just I think if I could remember one thing is that just always being encouraging and being that constant and being there for them through the ups and downs has really helped us in reintegration of the Roma.
Okay. Have you experienced difficulties with placing Roma? No, that's what I already... This question is twice. I have one myself. You can give me some more questions. Ihr könnt also noch fragen, auch auf Deutsch, kein Problem. Ich habe mir noch eine aufgeschrieben. I had one myself.
Please.
How much do you work? If you work as much in comparison to others as you speak fast in comparison to others...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Then how do you calm down? That was my question. And... And how do you fill up? Mm-hmm. And what do you tell your team how to calm down and to fill up?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe somebody would like to know or needs to know.
Mm-hmm. So it's more of a personal question then, huh?
You don't have to answer, but we would like you to.
You know, I think I used to, when I first started, I very much had the mentality of I was just working all the time. As soon as an email came in, I had to read it right then. My email box always had to be empty.
Oh, I can't apply that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see pretty soon that you can't stay that way for a long time. I am on call 24/7, as many of us in here are, and that is something that you do just kind of have to become used to. But you also do have to recognize the things that can wait and the things that no one's going to die. You can check your email inbox and say, okay, is someone going to die if I don't get to this right now? No, they're not. Okay, I'll do that tomorrow. For me, how I turn off is exercise and time with friends, definitely. and volunteer work outside of what we do.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
And movies. I really like movies. Sometimes you just need to veg.
Okay, good. I will go to a movie tonight, so if you have time.
Ah, great.
What else? There is no question coming in. We can't stop at this place, but if there is one question, there is one. Du hast noch eine? English, German? Okay. Go ahead. Loud enough.
I have a few trainees that went back to Bulgaria.
Yeah.
And right now we're doing culinary training, but that's actually something they can use there or not. What's your experience there? Is there maybe another trade, or would that be helpful?
No, I think that would be, especially the culinary would be helpful, especially if they're coming back to Sofia. Sofia is very much a growing place. There's lots of restaurants and cafes, and I think that's that is definitely a skill that they could be used there. As far as preparing them when they come back, I think connecting them with someone safe once they're before they leave to come back to Bulgaria is really crucial. Whether that's A21 or whether that's a family member that you know is safe, but just creating some sort of connection, a safe connection, is important. And also talking to them about the at-risk factors that I said, that the environment's going to be different, the circumstances are going to be different, the level of living is going to be different. Just kind of start having those conversations before they come back so that they realize that it's going to feel familiar but also different from what they're used to, the environment that they're used to when they're in with you and with your team.
If there's no social context in which they can return to, how would A21 be able to provide something?
Right, that's one of our key main things that we're wanting to do is just provide community if we can when victims are returning home, because that's the key thing is repatriation. Most of our victims that are calling our hotline and that we're helping through SAFE are coming from abroad, so that we have to be that community, that social contact that keeps them safe, if we do nothing else.
Have you or your staff experienced secondary trauma, and how do you handle it, if yes?
I personally have not. Someone who works on our hotline staff is just someone who kind of, I think, feels things a little bit more. And just, I think, just the status of being constantly on call and not knowing who's going to call or what the circumstance is going to be was troubling for her. So we do have supervision, monthly supervision, both from an expert and group supervisions. We have counseling available to us, and A21 as an organization has been really great to give time off, to make accommodations wherever needed if someone just needs to step back out of that environment for a period of time, to be able to come back in more fresh.
Mm-hmm. Gabi?
The story you were just showing of this girl going to Amsterdam, we had exactly the same story in Hamburg with your, could it be that it's the same story? That you just changed the locations?
It's possible, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Because I thought otherwise it would be very strange that these girls all phone by themselves. Because usually we also have a hotline, 24-hour.
Right.
Usually the girls don't phone. They don't know who's on the other side, and they always suspect that it's police.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Because we had exactly the same story with one of the girls from... Yeah.
We've had a couple of similar, but you're right.
Yeah, but this was exactly with the police and just the phone cut off and just before and... And then she was...
Yeah, it's a cool story, huh?
Do you work... Some more came in. Do you work with government and on the topic of reintegration? Mm-hmm. And do they pay for some of the services?
Right. We do work as closely as we can with governments. I kind of skipped it for time reasons, but Bulgaria is one of the countries that has a national referral mechanism that has been adopted by civil society. It's not mandated by law. But it is adopted by the civil society, and there is a referral mechanism that is overlooked by the National Commission. So Bulgaria has a National Commission Against Human Trafficking, and then several local commissions throughout the country that are supposed to manage victim cases and working with police. They are incredibly underfunded and understaffed, but we definitely try to work with them and support them, and they support us as much as possible. But they do not pay, for any of the services that we provide. Although they do have shelters. They have two shelters and are opening two more in the country, so they do pay for that. But Bulgaria has had interim governments off and on in the last 4 years, with another one. We had an interim government for the last 3 months, and we just had elections again. But because of the government constantly changing, the action plan against human trafficking has not been adopted or funded. So it's kind of hard when you have a constant changing government to keep human trafficking up high on the political will of a new government.
Thank you. Good to hear. Last question, and then I have one more to read, and then our time is up. Please.
I've got two small questions. I guess they count as one.
That's fine.
What are the numbers for A21? Can you give us some scope? How many have you had coming through your system? And secondly, does it make sense for a woman to return to their home country if they don't find a job there?
Do you mean numbers for A21 Bulgaria or A21 Global?
A21 Bulgaria.
Bulgaria. In Bulgaria, we've had, I think, just under 100 cases that we've helped. And no, it doesn't always make sense for the victim to return home, especially if they don't have a safe family or a job or a means of independence to return home to. And as I was saying, many times they don't. It's Animus is another organization, or La Strada, depends on what they're called. They're another global organization, and their director has said that only the worst of the worst cases actually come back to Bulgaria. The worst of the worst. So the bottom, maybe 5% of identified victims in Europe actually choose to come back to Bulgaria, if that can sort of illustrate how difficult doing reintegration is back in Bulgaria. So no, it doesn't always make sense for them to return. The government mandated minimum wage is 290 euro a month. In Sofia, they say that Sofia is not Bulgaria. So as soon as you leave the outskirts of the capital of the country, you're in a different country, and the wages there are much low. Within Sofia, a good salary is 800 to 1200 leva, which is 400 to 600 euro a month is fairly average. But in the countryside, it will be far, far worse than that, 200 to 300 euro a month.
One person wants to know, and that's the last question for now, and some more we will have chats around and it will not end now. But one is, I don't know if it's a question into generally Bulgaria or into that setting of work you do. Are you accepted as a female leader in Bulgaria?
Oh.
Or do you want that person to ask you later on?
To be honest, it has been extremely difficult to be a female leader in Bulgaria. Also to be, my style of leadership is more Western, it's more democratic, it's more collaborative. And what they have seen through communist times, through Soviet times, is a much more authoritarian, strong-handed male leader. And though that leader may be cruel to them, that's what they know and it's what they respect. So I've been on a very difficult journey that I'm still going through of learning how to lead that is both authentic and me, but is also meeting the needs of the Bulgarian staff that I have. So yes, it has been very, very difficult for me in that.
Thank you, Kyra Gordon.
You're welcome.